It's clear in Scripture that God's heart tips towards the orphan, the widow, the poor, the imprisoned, and the brokenhearted. But how, with the urgency of our weekly responsibilities, do we ensure that serving our community and showing compassion to those in need are priorities? And how do we make it simple for our groups? Those last two questions there are really, I think, the thread that will go through our whole talk today. How do we make serving in groups a priority, and how do we make it simple? The content that will go through the main Roman numerals will really go from sort of a strategic level to a ministry level to a tactical front lines level. And if we think about just those two questions, how do we make it a priority, how do we make it simple through that grid, we realize, wow, it really is a challenge. From an organizational level, there might be a capital campaign going on, there's strategic decisions, there might be staffing changes, there's Christmas coming, forget Christmas coming, there's Sundays coming. And then actually after that, it turns out there's another Sunday coming right after it. And that rhythm makes it hard to pull out and say, you know, compassion and service, the folks out there in our community that are hurting, it's hard to sometimes feel the urgency of that and make it a priority. At the ministry level, in the groups level, there are so many things we could talk to our leaders about, so many things we could coach our leaders on. How do you coach them to care? How do you coach them to find apprentice leaders? How do we find new leaders? How do we communicate about some of the great new curriculums going out? You know, we want to do a campaign and we want to do it on this topic this year. And oh, you know, it's probably a really good idea if they serve too. And again, it's hard to feel the urgency of that and push it to the front lines. And then you get to the front lines with the leaders, and they're volunteers. They've got full-time jobs. They're lucky if they can remember on the night of small group if they're on session 5 or session 6 in the study, right? And to get them to plan ahead, to be equipped, to mobilize their group to a service project is really just challenging. And yet, the flip side is, we've all seen the tendency in the group, even the best groups with the best leaders, to become holy huddles, right? It can so quickly become insular if all we're doing is meeting together, talking about our problems. And you hear me on this. I'm not trying to make fun of those issues. We have a season in our group where there's a couple that's really hurting, and a lot of the attention has gone to that group, and it's appropriate. And our group has actually served that couple. But it can become unhealthy, can't it, over time, where you move past talking about the challenges and the prayer requests of the people there to the family members of the people there, to the distant family members of the people there, to the friends of the distant family members, to the pets of the friends of the distant family members. And you're like, oh, I'm not sure this is the best way. And I don't think there's anything that we can do that can better infuse a sense of purpose, that can better infuse an outward focus in a group than to get a group serving together in the community. And honestly, it even can remind a group that becomes ignorant or forgetful over time that there are real needs in the community. There are real needs in their neighborhood. Single-parent families, elderly couples, someone dealing with job loss or something like that. And so I think we all have a sense, okay, this is important, but how do we make it a priority? How do we make it simple? And what we're going to do over the next bit of time is I'm going to share what we're learning, the questions we ask ourselves, some of the tensions we manage, and how we answer those questions. And hopefully you'll be able to take some of this and contextualize it for yourself. One thing before I jump into Roman numeral 1 that I want to define, this is a really important term, and it's the term tension to manage. Tension to manage, and the reason I want to define it is for Roman numeral 1, 2, 3, each of them are questions, and letter A that follows is a tension that we need to manage to answer that question. When I say tension to manage, it really comes from a leadership talk that Andy did for our staff starting 8 or 9 years ago. Some of you may be familiar with this idea, but the gist of it is this, that there are some challenges that we face that are problems to solve. That is, there's a problem with a single solution, and you find the single solution, you apply it, done, gone, bam, finished, and you can move on. You've solved the problem and it's done. There are other challenges that we face that though we try to find the solution to it, they keep coming back up. We keep finding ourselves debating between a couple options, whether it's just you're personally debating about it, whether it's a team debating about it, and it keeps coming up over and over time. That's because those things are not problems to be solved, those are tensions to manage. And the nature of a tension to manage is that if you pick one or the other of the tensions, you actually lose. That to successfully manage a tension, you have to, wait for it, manage the tension, right here, third row. Thank you very much. Yeah, you have to manage the tension. You have to hold the two in tension. So if I can give you just an example of what this looks like in group, every group manages the tension between the social relational fun time and the Bible study curriculum time, right? If they do only one or the other, they're not even a small group, right? If they do only one or the other, you eventually get out to a place where like, ooh, they're probably not growing. And so they have to manage the tension. Now, groups can manage the tension in different ways, right? Some can have a little bit more of the social and relational time. Some can do a deeper Bible study or spend a little bit more time in the curriculum, but they all have to manage that tension. So that's just, I wanted to define that term for you because that's a really important concept for us organizationally. And just as a note on that, I can't tell you how many times over the last 8 or 9 years I've been in a meeting, in a conversation here within our churches where someone has identified in the course of the conversation, you know what, I don't think this is a problem to solve. I think it's a tension to manage. And it immediately changes and clarifies the conversation if you can identify that. So it's a really, really helpful principle. Roman numeral one, how are compassion and service integrated into your church's strategy? Letter A, in order to answer this question well, we must manage the tension between serving as a ministry, that is what we do, and service as a value, how we do it. Now, if it's only a value, if it's written down, we say it's important, but we're not doing it, well, we can all stop and go, that's kind of called hypocrisy. What good is that? On the other side, if it's a ministry only, and we're doing it, we're mobilizing folks to serve, but it's not part of any greater strategy, it's not part of any larger commitment, they're just siloed events, they're not connected to each other, we're not trying to lead people somewhere in that. You go, wow, that's we're missing the boat here. We're not getting all that we could out of this. In fact, when you see service done poorly, it's often done that way. It's not connected. It's not part of a larger strategy. It's just service as an event as opposed to service as a lifestyle. In contrast, number one, when serving becomes a ministry, when we do make it a ministry, we're learning to make it simple, which is one of the things we're after. And number two, when service is a value, we're making it a priority. Letter B, to gain long-term traction, service must be anchored in the strategy of your church. Now, I just need to pause here and say this whole Roman numeral one kind of falls under the category of stating the obvious. There's not a whole lot you're writing down. You probably shouldn't be writing this stuff down. It's stuff we know, but here's what I want us to think about for just a second, that the decisions that we try to make in terms of mobilizing groups to serve are very tactical, practical decisions. It's a tactical, practical, frontline application. But I think we all know and understand intuitively that if we're not thinking about how does this flow from the strategic level of the organization all the way through, we're going to be really limited in our impact. We're going to hit all kinds of roadblocks and speed bumps along the way. And so I just want us to acknowledge some of this stuff from the start. I also want to say that we're really focusing a little bit more on the service side with the assumption that all your other breakouts are really focused from the group side. But any of these questions could be asked on the group side as well if we're merging groups and service today. How are compassion and service integrated into your church's strategy? How are groups integrated into your church's strategy? And you really need to kind of answer both of those questions. Back to B, one, to gain long-term traction, service must be anchored in the strategy of your church. Our church's vision is to lead people into growing relationship with Jesus Christ. In the Intersect Project, again, our job is serving made simple. Our job is to mobilize within the church, to mobilize our congregation to serve. We've said, you know, we really need to come alongside the church's strategy. So we want to lead people to a growing relationship with Jesus Christ through serving others. That's our mission. We're going to align ourselves with the church's strategic language. The church's vision is to create churches that unchurched people attend. Well, in the Intersect Project, again, our ministry within the church, we're not creating churches, but wow, what if we, our vision statement, became a serving church or a generous church where unchurched people wanted to engage? That seems like that would be us perfectly coming alongside the mission and vision of our church. Now, that's just our application. I don't know what that application is for you, but it's worth all of us finding out how can service be anchored in the strategy of your church? Number two, again, stating the obvious, you must have a mechanism for mobilizing people to serve. For us, this is the Intersect Project. But if we're going to make serving a priority, if we're going to make it simple, if we're going to integrate it into our church's strategy, it requires actually having a mechanism to mobilize people to serve. Roman numeral two, what are the roles of compassion and service in groups? Here we move more to the ministry area. And again, what are the roles of compassion and service in groups? To answer that question, letter A, we must manage the tension between mobilizing groups to serve and equipping groups for effective service. Now, again, if we pick just one or the other, if we mobilize only, we're doing the what of serving, but we're not thinking about the how or the why. Maybe people are disconnected from the fact that we serve because Jesus called us to serve and he first served us. Maybe they're not thinking about, maybe our congregation in serving in that way is not thinking about whether or not the service that they're providing is actually helpful Or as in contrast to, is it harmful? Is it enabling to those that they're serving? In contrast, if you equip only, you got a lot of groups talking about service, you got a lot of groups thinking about service, but none of them doing it. In contrast, letter B, when we mobilize and equip, people will do good well. Doing good is the mobilizing. They're out there serving, but doing good well means that they've been equipped to think about service in the right way. Maybe it's even equipped to come back and process their service experience with their small group afterwards to maximize the impact. How was that for you? What did you think and feel? How do you think that was for them? What could we do next time that would be more helpful for them? Should we do it again? Is there something else we would like to try? And just helping a group engage at that level to have it sink down a little bit as opposed to them just checking off a box and we did that service thing. I want to talk for a second about equipping. And I have found, and this is both from a question that we tend to ask here and then from questions that we get from other churches, that when it comes to equipping groups to serve, the most natural question, and this is really obvious, is how do we equip our groups to serve? I think that's an okay question, but I think it's worth us coming up a level and going, what about, are there any ways that our congregation is already equipped for service? Think about the other contexts that you have. For example, for us here, we benefit in the Intersect Project, as we mobilize our folks to serve out in the community, we benefit from a fantastic volunteer culture inside the church, that folks who serve with our preschool, our elementary school, our students, our groups, our guest services and host team, our service programming teams, they have had great training and equipping. They've been envisioned. They know how their little part connects to the whole and why it matters. They've been coached on being flexible. They've been coached on giving other people a fantastic experience. And they feel valued and appreciated. Well, guess how those folks are going to do when they go into a nonprofit in the community, when that's what they know? It takes a little bit of the pressure off of us to have to necessarily coach on those things. Maybe you can think about what are ways that we've talked about compassion and service or generosity on Sunday mornings or in your weekend services. Just as an example, 2 years ago, Andy did a sermon on mutual submission. Out of Ephesians 5, the bottom line was a question, the application was a question, and he encouraged everybody and every family to ask everyone else in their family, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? Really simple question, but isn't that a fantastic question? And wouldn't you love every member in your family to be asking every other member in your family, what can I do to help? Well, when that's coached, either we don't have to go back and talk about that, or we have existing content that we can leverage for equipping. We're asked the question, hey, do you know of any great service curriculum? We don't really ever know of any great service curriculum, and it's not that there isn't any out there, it's just that hasn't been the way that we've chosen to equip groups for service, because another thing that we've observed over and over again is that adults learn on a need-to-know basis. And we say, all right, how do we get equipping for service to our groups just in time? How do we get to them when, as, right before, sometimes even right after, they've served? And in that situation, we're going to get the most impact out of it. Letter C, we want to move people from awareness to engagement to identity. This is something of a spiritual growth spectrum that we use to talk about how we want people to grow spiritually when it comes to service. And if you think about this as a spectrum, awareness, engagement, identity, even before awareness, you could put ignorance out there. And as a church for the unchurched, we're thrilled when folks come in to our church totally ignorant of the fact that there are real needs in our community, that there are nonprofits meeting those real needs, that those nonprofits have needs for resources like volunteers and funding, and that our church provides opportunities to meet those real needs of the community through our nonprofit partners, and we have a chance to bring some sense of awareness to our congregation on that front. When it comes to the engagement side, we really try, and I'm speaking a little bit more from a congregational global perspective more than just for groups, but we try to provide points along that spectrum. So if you just zoom into the engagement portion of this spectrum, there is within that even a spectrum in and of itself. Someone to engage the first time, we're going to celebrate if on food drives, one of our food drive Sundays, they bring one can of soup off their pantry shelf. They didn't even think about it during the week, though we promoted it like crazy. They didn't even think about it during the week. They just grabbed an expired can of soup off their shelf and brought it in. We're going to celebrate it. We're going to thank them. It's the first time they thought about giving to others. It's the first time they started to connect the dots. And maybe next time they're going to be purposeful and buy 20 pounds. And maybe the next time they're going to give 2 hours of their time on a Sunday to actually serve at the food drive. And maybe the next time when our Be Rich campaign comes around, they're going to block off 2 or 3 hours out in advance to serve, and maybe they're going to invite a friend. And then maybe when their Singles Do Justice event comes around, they're going to give half of a day to serve. And then maybe they get introduced along the way to either someone that they know they can serve regularly, some people they want to serve with, a nonprofit that they're passionate about, and they know someone there now. And they're going to start serving regularly. Maybe it's weekly, maybe it's monthly, maybe it's quarterly, but they begin to make it a lifestyle. Maybe through our partnership with Woodson Primary School here at Buckhead Church, they decide to mentor and go once a month to hang out with a kid, kindergartner, first grader, second grader at Woodson Primary School. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, wow, it's an identity. They're not doing it because it's something they're supposed to do. They're taking hold of the fact that as those who are free, we're reborn into servanthood. And service is not something we do. Servants, that's who we are. And it becomes part of their identity. And if we can move people along that spectrum, we think that's a huge win. Now, let me talk about this within groups. I want to show you two videos here. But before I do, I want to tell you a little bit about our Be Rich campaign. How many of you, just out of curiosity, how many of you heard at all about our Be Rich campaign? Okay, just a few of you, so I'll give a little bit of context. Be Rich is our annual giving and serving campaign. We've done it, actually we launched this Sunday. One of my great privileges is to work with our team to lead our Be Rich campaign. Annual giving serving campaign launches this Sunday. The name is lifted from 1 Timothy 6:18. Paul says to Timothy, command those who are rich in this world to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. And so we say to our congregation through this campaign 8 years in a row now, hey, we're going to give you a chance to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. We're going to give you a chance to do more and give more. We're going to do 1 week that's focused on giving financially, do more, give more money. We're going to do 1 week on food drive, do more, give more food. We're going to do 1 week with Operation Christmas Child, do more, give more gifts. We're going to do 1 week, most pertinent to our conversation today, where we serve in the community, do more, give more time. The video we're about to show you is the video that we use to launch that time call to action to our congregation. So.
Think about a time when your neighbor was there to help you on that so-called easy project, or when your friends helped you move that large sofa. How about when your car had a flat tire and a stranger was willing to help change it? It turns out we all need help sometimes. Every day we interact with people who may be struggling to get by and could use a hand. Some of those people may feel inadequate to care for their families because of a job loss. Maybe some are battling sickness and feel alone because they can't get help. Maybe there are children longing for an adult's attention. The good news is that this year, as part of Be Rich, we have an opportunity to make a difference for those in our community who are hurting. By joining forces with our local nonprofit partners, our churches across the U.S. and around the world will serve over 40,000 hours in our communities. 40,000 hours. That's like one person working nonstop for over 4 years. That's a lot of time. But if we all do our part, that 4 years dwindles down to 45 minutes a person. And we've made giving your time as simple as we know how. Go to the Be Rich website and register for a service project, or create your own using our online tools. Imagine what can be done with 40,000 hours. 40,000 hours of care for hurting families. 40,000 hours of serving your neighbors in need. 40,000 hours of helping our nonprofit partners get ahead. When you give your time, you're doing more than you think. You'll not only accomplish an important task, but you'll let our struggling neighbors know that they matter and they are not alone. This is our opportunity to do more, to give more, to be rich.
So I'm excited to say that was last year's video. That was our stretch goal. That was a big reach for us. And we got 43,000 hours, which is pretty exciting. So we hit our goal. Really incredible. Really briefly, our equipping in that was pretty subtle. It was more implicit than explicit. It was trying to make an emotional connection between those who were going to serve and those who they were serving. It was saying, hey, you've been in need sometime, and you remember what it was like for someone to come alongside of you. You have a chance to do that for others. It also focused more on the emotional impact of volunteering, telling someone that they're important, telling someone that they're valuable, telling someone that they have dignity and giving them hope than it does on meeting the physical, tangible needs. And those are some things that we think are important in that. For most of us, let's see, this is eighth year, so for 5 years, our small groups would leverage that to serve, and it was great. Our small groups are insiders. They started to see it coming, so they would plan ahead knowing Be Rich was coming. They'd get their group together. They'd find a couple nights of the week where they could serve, and they would assign someone in their small group. They may have even figured out that the website launches at 9:15 a.m., and they had somebody ready to pounce on the keyboard to get the best service opportunity for them and for their group. And within a few hours, 70%+ of our service projects were gone, were scooped up, which is exciting, fantastic problem to have, but we started to ask ourselves the question, because we're getting survey data at the end that goes, love Be Rich. But there are not enough service opportunities, not enough weeknight service opportunities, not enough weekend service opportunities that get scooped up way too fast. If you could do anything about that, it sure would be helpful. And we're asking ourselves, are we mobilizing the right people to serve through this? So through that, we responded and said, you know what, we need to ask our small groups to participate in a little bit different way. We're about to show you, to participate and Be Rich, to serve together in a different way. We're about to show you is a video that we just launched to our small groups about a week and a half ago. Again, Be Rich hasn't even launched yet, so they're insiders. They're hearing about Be Rich before the rest of the congregation, and this is how we're asking them to participate.
For the past 8 years, we have learned what it means to be extraordinarily generous through Be Rich, our annual giving and serving campaign. The name Be Rich comes from 1 Timothy 6:18. In that letter, the Apostle Paul tells Timothy, "Command those who are rich in this present world to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share." Last year alone, we served 43,000 hours during Be Rich. Half of those hours were create your own service opportunities. You know why that's a big deal? A lot of those hours were served by small groups, and that allowed more people who aren't in small groups to take part in Be Rich through the opportunities we've reserved with our nonprofit partners. So we want to take a moment to say thank you for serving together, for letting our neighbors know they're important to us, and for demonstrating to our community that the local church cares. And thank you for joining us this year. We hope that more people, more small groups than ever before, take the opportunity to be rich toward others. You know that while serving together is fun, it's never convenient. So here are four things your small group can do to start creating your own service project and navigate any potential challenges. One, explore. Dedicate a group meeting this fall to exploring service options. We'll provide you with some resources to help guide the discussion. Be open-handed. Group members can be passionate about serving particular people or causes, so work together to choose the best opportunity for the group. Two, decide. Dream big, but then narrow down your choices to one or two things you know you can complete in the coming weeks. Keep it simple. Three, serve. Follow through and be rich together. Four, report. After you've served, take a few minutes to log your hours at howtoberich.org. It's good for your small group to serve together. You know that. It strengthens your relationships, and those relationships help you grow spiritually. You also know that when the church does good, God's name is made great. But that only happens when we come together and seize the opportunity to meet the needs of those around us. Thanks again for your generosity. Don't miss the opportunity to participate in Be Rich this fall as we unleash a brand new wave of generosity, not just in our community, but across the nation and around the world.
So on your way out, you'll get a copy of the discussion guide for this if you head out those back doors. But all of these resources are available on groupleaders.org/be-rich. If you're interested in checking them out, that video, the discussion guide, a leader preparation guide, some FAQs. The spirit behind it is this. Hey, small groups, we're asking you to be insiders with us. We're asking you to step alongside of our vision, take a little bit more on yourselves, because it's harder to create your own service opportunity than it is to just register, but we're asking you to do that because there are folks in our church who aren't connected. They aren't engaged yet. And if we can get them connected and engaged and have a positive experience, then maybe someday they'll be in a small group like you are. And so we know that we're actually asking our groups to do a little bit more in the curriculum. We try to acknowledge the obstacles. We encourage them to identify a need and just do something about it. The core of the discussion, the group discussion, is, hey, as a small group, we want you to build a list together. Ideally, a list that the whole group can see, and just a list of names. Name the widows that you know. Name the single-parent families you know. Name the families struggling with unemployment, financial issues, medical challenges, grieving a loss, maybe just a family that's new in your neighborhood. And even maybe there's a nonprofit that our church doesn't partner with that you know about and believe in. The hope is, the thought is, that every group's going to have a long enough name that they have a very tangible sense that they can do something for someone. It's a matter of pressing through that and making it happen. One of the really exciting things for us is that last year of the 43,000 hours served, as I said, over half of them were Create Your Own Hours. So it's been really fun to see us be able over time to equip. And that's not just through the small group. We have a couple other tools for Create Your Own. Lastly on that, the best answer that I can give you to Roman numeral 2, what are the roles of compassion and service in groups in terms of what our answer is that a few years ago, groups stepped back, reevaluated their leader essentials and said, we need to make serve together one of our leader essentials. We feel like that's one of the 8 things all leaders need to do. 1 of 8. Right? So can't do it all the time, can't be the primary focus all the time, but how do we infuse it into the groups? And that made this partnership between Intersect and Be Rich and our groups ministry really easy and natural. Roman numeral 3, how will you mobilize your groups to serve? That is, how will you make it a priority and how will you make it simple? This is really getting tactical on the front lines. Letter A, we must manage the tension between finding engaging service opportunities and meeting the real needs of our communities. Engaging service opportunities, that's about making it beneficial for our partners, for us. Beneficial for our volunteers, for us. Sometimes that means making it really simple and convenient. Sometimes it means making it challenging. We feel like when it comes to Be Rich, maybe a really good thing for our small group is to challenge them a little bit outside their comfort zone, challenge them to commit a little bit more time to make it happen. On the other hand, meeting the real needs of the community is about, for us, making sure that the service projects that we offer and our efforts in the community are genuinely beneficial for our community and for our partners. Now, those aren't always in contrast to each other. Sometimes we find service projects and it's just a natural match. That's fantastic for our volunteers and it's helpful for them. But we've all heard the stories of, for example, a short-term mission trip that is with a host team or a partner organization. They come back after a week of working and the host organization spends a week cleaning up after them. And we say, okay, how do we avoid that? How do we make sure that we're genuinely beneficial? And managing this tension is important for us. And the way that we do it is letter B, we partner and don't pioneer. This is really, really helpful for us. With partnering, when we have these great nonprofits, for one, part of partnering with that nonprofit was knowing that they were already meeting the community needs. So that, in some ways, checks off half of that tension for us. The other thing that we check in with a partner before agreeing to organization before agreeing to partner with them is, do you provide volunteer opportunities? What kind of volunteer opportunities? How do you treat your volunteers? Well, if we get, yes, we're meeting community needs, we provide great volunteer opportunities, guess what? They're managing the tension for us. That's what they do. We're not even putting a burden on them. That's what they do. And again, we have a tension managed for us. We have those vetting criteria, 6 criteria. One of them is service opportunities, and another one is focus area, is what we call it. But what are you doing in the community? How are you meeting the real needs of the community? And what difference is it making? And how do you know? And we ask those questions as part of the vetting process. If I could talk just for a second, back up, and just give you context across our 6 churches here, our 6 campuses. For one, the expression of Intersect at each of our campuses is different. It's different depending on a bunch of factors. It's different depending on how old the church is, how long it's been around, the size of the staff and the size of the church. It's different depending on the context. Is it rural? Is it suburban? Is it urban? All of those have different community needs and different nonprofit landscapes. It's also different based on some of the partners we have. I'm mentioning nonprofits, but 2 of our churches have partnerships with local schools. Several of our churches are building relationships with our government leaders, city and county government leaders, and those have also been avenues for making an impact in the community. That's sort of at the Intersect level. If you go down to the groups level, a bunch of our churches are really responding in a more, apart from really the Be Rich service, Be Rich small group experience, which I just showed you, are responding in maybe a more opportunistic and reactive way, and that's just based on staff limitations, but they're saying, hey, let's pay attention to the needs of our nonprofit partners. If a partner comes to us and says, hey, we could use 40 volunteer opportunities, well, let's jump on that. We don't have to do any work to vet that. Let's go to our small groups and say, hey, guys, we have a great opportunity for you to serve. Buckhead has been ahead of the curve. They're here, obviously. This is where we are now. It's an urban context, more well-developed nonprofit landscape. the needs of the community are a little bit more obvious to most people. And so here, Intersect has been going for 8 years. They have 7 partners. And really, for most of those 8 years, I think they have been intentionally mobilizing small groups to serve through a website. Megan Springer, who's going to come up, and her team go to our nonprofit partners, vet weeknight and weekend opportunities, 2 to 3 hours, put them on a website and say, hey, small groups, you can go here anytime to pull a small group or to pull a small group service opportunity and to go serve with one of our partners. Now, all of that said, Buckhead has recently kind of taken a step back and said, hey, how is this process working for us? Is this the best way to do it? And one of their conclusions has been, we still think that this is a great mechanism, but instead of doing it all year round, what if we thought more in seasons? What if we acknowledged that, hey, there's a lot of things for groups to talk about, and if it just is something that we constantly offer, does it sort of become background noise? So we've got this one obvious season where we're pushing small groups to serve through the Be Rich Small Group experience. What if we picked another in the first half of the year where we mobilize them to service opportunities with our partners? Interestingly enough, at North Point Community Church, where I work in the Intersect team, we're having a similar conversation of how do we take groups to the next level? We've been doing the Be Rich Small Group experience. Well, what if we did something where we mobilize our small groups to serve with our partners in the community, not in the Be Rich season, another time of year, but just for a season, at the same time we're having these conversations and going, all right, what would it look like to just be to pick a season of the year? And we can fill those gaps by saying, hey, our nonprofit partners are always there. The tools to create your own small group service project, they're always there. You can do that anytime, but 2 times of the year, we really want to make a push. That's the direction we're heading. I wish I could tell you that it's working, it's been a huge game changer, but just from what we're learning, the conversations we're having, that's where a couple of our churches are headed in the next year. Number one, it allows us, that is partnering instead of pioneering, allows us to leverage our resources to help our partners go further faster. Mentioned that earlier, instead of recreating those things internally, that's a huge benefit of this for us. And number two, partnering instead of pioneering multiplies our influence in the community. I want to bring up John Hambrick. He's going to tell you a really exciting example of this. And as he's coming up, just a couple other things that we've seen. And I don't think this was intentional when we chose to partner instead of pioneer. One is an executive director of a non-faith-based organization inviting her whole board to our church. That's pretty cool. Another is an executive director of a non-faith-based organization inviting a pastor of one of our churches into their organization to do a leadership development talk. That's pretty cool. Several of our churches have, whether it's Intersect staff, come on up, John. Several of our churches have Intersect staff, whether they are the lead pastor or Intersect staff, regularly invited to city initiatives, to inaugurations, to prayer breakfasts, and so on. And again, John has another great example of the way we're seeing our influence in our community grow and the way serving in groups are coming together. Welcome, John, would you?
So, nice to see you guys. So I work with, my job currently at Buckhead Church is part starting point and part staff development. How many were at the starting point deal yesterday? Okay. So this may sound a little familiar. So for those of you who don't know, Starting Point is a kind of one of the main ways we do evangelism, and it's a place where we create a small group environment, basically for non-Christians, where they can have a safe place to explore faith and experience community. So that's what Starting Point is. And while it's going by God's grace, it's going really well here at Buckhead Church. However, when we kind of look at the culture in Atlanta, we are noticing that there's an increasing percentage of people who either can't or won't come to church. And we currently, or until about a year ago, we were doing Starting Point just on site here. So there's a growing number of people we couldn't connect with because they wouldn't come here. So what do we do? We were struggling with that. And then one of our Intersect partners called. Atlanta Mission, they do a very robust, nuanced ministry to homeless people. They said, hey, we've got an idea. What if we did Starting Point at our facility at Atlanta Mission? And we said, wow, what a cool idea. Will it work? We don't know. Well, let's try. So we tweaked some things around. We found some leaders that we thought would do well in that context, and we did a test drive. We did a beta. So we had 3 groups. And guess what? By God's grace, it just went really well. And we had all sorts of stories about great conversations about faith. A couple guys got baptized. And it went so well that Atlanta Mission said, hey, let's do this again. So we did some more tweaking, and we're about ready to launch 2 more groups. And in the meantime, This is starting to gain some traction. So we are doing a starting point group in a context called Drug Court. It's a long story, but Drug Court is basically a rehab program. It's run by the state. So it's weird. This would not happen in my hometown of Los Angeles. But here in Atlanta, they actually invited us to do Starting Point in this state-administered program for convicted felons with drug records. So, and in fact, I was just there yesterday. We're talking to a group of criminals about Jesus. And it's just, and they're, I mean, it's a conversation. It's really cool. And then next week, we hope to kick off a Starting Point group with another nonprofit called Serenity Steps, and they are a on the street outreach ministry to prostitutes. So if God allows, in a couple of weeks, we'll be sitting down having a conversation about faith with hookers. I mean, and we're just going, wow. We want to keep doing, and we are doing Starting Point here, but we just can't think of better places to have conversations about Jesus and in those contexts. It's just like an amazing thing. So we hope to continue. Well, we want to maintain doing Starting Point here. We want to continue to make inroads out into the community. This is a win beyond the normal Starting Point win, which is to see people enter into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. There's two other wins. And you know, you guys, I hope you don't think we're batting 1,000 around here. We screw stuff up all the time. We just don't tell you about it because it probably would be a career decision for some of us. So,
although that would be a well-attended breakout, wouldn't it?
Well, that's good. Mistakes we have made. Wow. Who would speak at that?
It'd be a long breakout.
It'd be a long breakout.
A long,
yeah.
Long, okay. A big Q&A panel.
Yeah, that's right. It would just be a Q panel. Just seeing if you're paying attention.
Well said.
So there's two wins, we think, which we're trying to hit. One is innovation. You guys, you know this. Here's the deal. The 21st century is evolving, especially in Western culture, is evolving more rapidly than any culture in the history of the planet. And we, you know, truth doesn't change, our message doesn't change, but our methodologies have to change or we're just going to fall behind and become irrelevant. So we think it's a subtle tweak, doing it out there rather than here, but it's an attempt to innovate in an effort to engage the culture with the gospel. And in this particular instance, it's innovating in terms of working between Starting Point and Intersect, which leads us to our second win, which is integration. By doing this, by Starting Point and the Intersect project kind of partnering up, we're breaking down the silos between those two departments. And we're knitting the church together at a deeper level, and we're broadening the ownership of both ministries. So in other words, the Starting Point staff is starting to become, rather than just observing Intersect, they're starting to become fans of Intersect, and vice versa. The Intersect people, instead of just observing Starting Point, they're starting to become fans because we're doing this together. It integrates the church at a deeper level. And integration and innovation are absolutely crucial if we're going to be a healthy church on mission in the 21st century.
Yeah, so you put that together. Letter C, innovation and integration must be part of the equation. As you can probably tell from just this couple minutes, John is one of the great hearts and minds around our halls and does a lot of staff development stuff as a staff pastor to a lot of our staff, and is really particularly gifted, I think, in innovation and creating things. In fact, I owe my job to him because John was the one who really pioneered Intersect 8 years ago as it was just launching. So thank you for sharing that, John. And as you can see, that's not in the purest sense us mobilizing a group to serve together, but influence that comes out from us partnering with our nonprofit partners is an opportunity for them to leverage groups. You know, it's not us saying, hey, groups, why don't you go out? It's them saying, hey, would you actually take your group's model and strategy and bring it to us? And it's just this incredible opportunity for us to leverage that and grow in our influence. I'm going to bring up Megan here in just a second, but just, you know, if we look back, I hope there's something in there in those questions and those tensions to manage and maybe a little bit of what we've learned and are learning here at North Point that help you mobilize your folks to serve, mobilize your small groups to serve, that help make it a priority, that help make it simple. We really believe that relationships fuel service and service fuels relationships and relationships fuel spiritual growth and service fuels spiritual growth, and really good things happen if we can get our small groups out there serving together. So thank you.